Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Susan E. Atkins is a retired media relations professional with more than 40 years of communication experience, including teaching journalism at the University of Tulsa. Former vice president of a Fortune 500 company, she founded her own media and investor relations agency catering to the booming biotechnology industry, primarily in California, where she lived for 40 years. She sold that company to an international communications company and has retired to the U.S. Virgin Islands since then. She recently authored a heartbreaking story called Never Again that brings to life the most heinous atrocity perpetrated by Americans against Americans in U.S. history, the Tulsa Race Massacre of 1921. Here to tell us more about the book is author Susan E. Atkins. And Susan, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Oh, thank you, Eric. I'm so glad to be here. I'm very impressed with this network.
Well, I thank you for the kind feedback and also an honor to have you with us today and looking forward to hearing all the details. So for starters, if you would, Susan, tell us about your background and what was your inspiration for writing the book, Never Again?
Well, as you point out, I grew up in Tulsa. I lived there for 30 years, taught at the University of Tulsa, attended Catholic schools in Tulsa, went to the University of Oklahoma, and of course, then started my career in California, Stanford Research Institute, Genentech, and then started in biotechnology. But my impetus for writing the book was those 30 years in Tulsa, and I never heard a word, not in my, what I think was a pretty good education, not a word. It wasn't until the 1990s when I, like many other Americans, heard about it because of the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. I'd never heard of it till then. And when I did hear about it, I just became outraged, outraged that it happened and outraged that I'd never heard of it. So I started researching, and man, did I research. I mean, you know, having taught at a university, I knew how to do that. And what I learned is that, you know, the history was brilliant, brilliant histories, but a little dry. So I tried to write something that would be accessible to a general audience and to people who maybe had heard a little bit about it, but didn't know much and wanted to know more. And this way they could access it and not have to read a 400 or 500 page history book.
Well, I found it quite interesting that you've only found out about this after the Oklahoma City bombings, and that's very, very interesting. If you would, tell us briefly about the book, get into some of the highlights there.
Okay, well, I started with the Oklahoma City bombing because that's when most people found out about it, and it was, you know, called the worst tragedy in Oklahoma history, and then the black leader said, oh, not so fast. I mean, there were 130, 40, 50 people, I can't remember exactly the number, killed, and it was tragic, and it was children, and it was, within 2 years, they built a memorial. But 75 years later, nothing was said about the Tulsa Race Massacre. And so that's where I started. And then I flash back to how Greenwood was built by entrepreneurs who came from all over the country, brilliant lawyers and journalists and just land guys and black people, because Greenwood was seen as the promised land. It was an encapsulated economy, totally segregated, of course, because everything was in those days. But it was self-sufficient. It was thriving. And yes, of course, there was poverty. There was poverty throughout Tulsa, Oklahoma, the United States, and Greenwood. But Greenwood Avenue was the showcase. When Booker T. Washington visited in the early 1900s, he named it the Negro Wall Street. And blacks came from all over the country to, you know, escape the hard cruelty of the South and to start a new life. And many were doing just that in Greenwood. And then the tragedy occurred. Memorial Day weekend. And this had been coming on because greedy land grabbers wanted the land that Greenwood property owners owned to build a white commercial district near the railroad depot. And a yellow rag called the Tulsa Tribune had been fanning the flames of hatred by calling Greenwood a cesspool and only pointing out the bad things about it and not pointing out any of the good things about it. And so it was Memorial Day weekend. People were drunk and carousing, and this incident occurred where a black man was accused of accosting a white woman. Well, obviously, that just caused everybody to go crazy. They were lovers, but that was a big secret. And so a lynch mob, I mean, they arrested him. A lynch mob tried to, you know, get the sheriff to turn him over. And thank goodness, Sheriff Gustafson did not do that. And the black veterans who had marched in their own Black Memorial Day parade after World War I had come over to the courthouse where the jail was, and they offered help to the sheriff. And he said, well, I don't need your help. But here was this mob growing, and they saw these black soldiers armed. And so they all raced home, got their guns. A tussle occurred, shots rang out, and it began. And the police, the white police, deputized these drunk, unruly mobsters and told them, go get guns. And pardon my language, but they said, shoot every nigger you can find. And so that's what happened. And for 2 days or 14, 16 hours, something on that order, they rampaged through Greenwood by foot, by horse, on from the air, dropping incendiary bombs, and burned 40 blocks of the most thriving African-American community in the country to the ground. Homes, businesses, doctor's offices, lawyer's offices, hospital, library, churches, schools. 10,000 left homeless, upwards of 300 murdered, mass graves, people thrown in them, unidentified. You know, it was really horrible. So I had to invent some characters to carry the story forward from 1921 to 2021. And so they do. And they fought tirelessly for reparations, for reconciliation. But it really wasn't until the 1990s that anything started. And appallingly, very little has been done to date. And so that's a lot of what my epilogue covers, is what has been done, how efforts have been thwarted, and here we are.
Well, we're certainly most thankful for your bringing this to light and bringing this to our attention. Thanks so much for your efforts on this. Now, why did it take so long to talk about this event?
Well, I can, of course, speculate, and my speculation is this. First of all, I expect that the white mobsters, and these were forefathers, these were, in 1925, the Ku Klux Klan swept every Tulsa municipal office, okay? So these were town fathers, these were civic leaders. They did not want to admit their part in this crime. Black people were afraid that if they made a fuss, it would happen again. And so this was the situation. And honestly, the blacks rebuilt Greenwood. The Red Cross was about the only help they got because Tulsa refused help. For 2 weeks, the national media covered this story. And then radio silence, something else happened, and you know, nothing happened. Nothing was covered again. And Tulsa refused all help from the outside except the Red Cross. And thank goodness for the Red Cross. They set up tents. They fed people. You know, after the during the massacre, the police rounded up every black man. The National Guard came in and rounded up the black men and put them in internment camps. They did nothing to the rioters, the people who were burning and so on. But anyway, I think that part of that is the shame, the guilt, and the fear that stopped people from talking about it until it just couldn't be kept quiet any longer.
Now, you mentioned some of the characters earlier. Describe some of the characters in the book. Touch on some of that, if you would.
Oh, I'd love to. They're fascinating characters. My two protagonists are Hattie Johnson. They changed her last name so that nobody would recognize that she was the daughter of Dick Rowland and Sarah Page. Now, that's fiction. They didn't have a child. They were lovers, but they didn't have a child. But I had to make up somebody who was going to carry the story forward. So Hattie is the one. And she begged her mother to tell her where her daddy was, what was happening, and her mother wouldn't tell her. Finally, in the 30s, they moved back to Tulsa from Kansas City, and her mother told her the whole horrible story, and she was like 15 or something, and she just went, oh my, you know, she was angry, And she started Booker T. Washington High School, and she met Lucy Ann Barnes, and they were both children of mixed race parentage, both raised by single moms. Actually, Hattie ended up being raised by her aunt because she couldn't be raised by a white mother in anywhere, but certainly not in Tulsa. She got to see her mother infrequently, and we cover some of that and the feelings and the sadness. But these two women, Hattie and Lucy Ann, Lucy Ann's a feisty little, becomes a lawyer, and they just fought tirelessly. Hattie becomes a school teacher at Booker T. Washington, and they fought tirelessly for reparations and for just acknowledgement that this had happened, and for, you know, the lives and wealth, the wealth that white people ended up being able to accumulate because they stole it and they burned down the wherewithal for the black people to accumulate it. It's heartbreaking. So those were two characters that I invented. Most of the characters are actual people who existed. However, I had to combine some of the backstories of some of the entrepreneurs who came to Tulsa. I made them all Tulsa natives, which just wasn't true. I mean, but for brevity and for readability, but these were just brilliant. I mean, doctors, lawyers. The doctor was called by the Mayo brothers, the best Negro doctor in America. And the hoteliers, and I mean, Greenwood was thriving. They had hotels and nightclubs and billiards parlors and jewelry stores and furriers and, of course, grocery stores on every corner. In any event, so I combined their backstories. I didn't name the head of the real estate exchange by name because I had to put too many words in his mouth. His actions did speak louder than his words, and he was not a good person. I made up children for him because one of them had to commit this horrible atrocity. And, you know, so some things had to be made up to make the story move along. Like I said, I love history, but historical fiction is my favorite genre because it brings to life the aspects of the history more than just the facts, the numbers, the dates, the places. It brings to life the human aspects. And that's what I wanted to write, was a book that highlighted the human and inhumane aspects of this terrible tragedy.
By the sounds of it, it certainly sounds like you have done just that, and really do appreciate your taking a moment to be with us here today. And it does sound like a must read in all regards. Today we're joined by Susan E. Atkins, a retired media relations professional with more than 40 years of communications experience, including teaching journalism at the University of Tulsa. She is the author of the heartbreaking story called Never Again that brings to life the most heinous atrocity perpetrated by Americans against Americans in U.S. history, the Tulsa Race Massacre of 1921, here on Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, Susan, who do you think this book is most specifically geared towards?
Well, I think, you know, if I had been a seasoned author, I probably would have had a very specific audience in mind. However, what I did feel is that many people, like myself, had heard just a little bit about this, and maybe they were curious, but they didn't want to read a 400 or 500 page history book. And so I've tried to create something very readable to a general audience who maybe they heard something about it. They weren't quite sure what they heard or what was true. And so this gives them the facts. It also makes, I hope, for good reading. And I think that that's the audience that I'm looking for.
It makes sense. Now, another question for you as well. Any advice for those first time authors tuning in? If you were to do things over, anything you would have done differently? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, the best advice I can give somebody is, most, I guess, first-time authors spend so much time on the book that when it comes to launching it or publishing it, we're just kind of, you know, babes in the woods. So I would suggest maybe your first or second draft, start looking for a publisher. Start looking for a PR agency who's done book launches way before the book is finished, because you have to start early or you just won't get it done. And so those are the two mistakes that I made and the advice I would give a would-be author.
I certainly do appreciate your feedback and advice in those regards. Much appreciated. Now, as you know, there's been a lot in the news lately about hate and race crimes. Do you feel as a country we've made any progress, or are we right where we started in race relations? What's your take on that?
Oh, you know, Eric, I wish I had better news on this front. I guess there's fewer lynchings, which is good news, but I'm afraid that semi-automatic weapons are just a more efficient means to the same ugly end. So I think that if Sandy Hook and Columbine and more recently Buffalo and Birmingham, if these don't change your mind about hate and murder and I don't know what will. So I wish I had a good answer for you. I don't think I do.
Unfortunately, I do agree with you at where we're at right now. Very, or if any, progress. Now, what can communities do to help educate on diversity and race relations? Any input on that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, well, at the risk of sounding a little self-serving, I'm going to suggest book clubs, because I think if a book club reads a book like Never Again, remember, all the proceeds go to the Greenwood Rising Museum, so we really hope that people do buy the book and read it. But I think book clubs can have these open discussions, because obviously they were brought together because they have something in common. They like to read books, and if they read a book like this, then maybe they'll have that conversation. I think the other group that is perhaps obvious, but also church groups. I think church groups can bring people together. Now, it would be nice if we could bring people together across racial lines. That's probably going to take a little time. It's happening. Of course it happens. But it's harder. And it's hard to talk about race. I joke it's probably harder to talk about race in America than it is to talk to your teenager about sex.
Isn't that the truth? Well, I'll tell you what, Susan, I really do appreciate your joining us here today and for writing the book, Never Again. Where can listeners get more information on yourself as well as the book, and where can they best pick up the book?
Okay, well, thank you for asking. You can purchase the book online at Barnes & Noble, at Google Play, at iTunes, and I strongly recommend Amazon, because you can write a review on Amazon. And remember, all the proceeds from Never Again will go to the Greenwood Rising Museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And of course, we'll leave links accordingly within the show notes of this broadcast to aid as well. Susan, all the best. Thanks so much for joining us here today on EPN. Certainly was our pleasure.
Thank you very much, Eric. Good luck to you.
And to you as well. We've been speaking with Susan E. Atkins, a retired media relations professional with more than 40 years of communications experience, including teaching journalism at the University of Tulsa. She is the author of the new book, Never Again, that brings to life the most heinous atrocity perpetrated by Americans against Americans in U.S. history, the Tulsa Race Massacre of 1921. And this book can be purchased either on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Google Play, and other book providers. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.